Hello and welcome to the Phil and Simon Show number 38. My name is Simon Minty.
And my name is Phil Friend.
Thank you for listening. We have got a few things to catch up with from the last show. So a bit later on, we'll do a mini update on various little items. One of our listeners, Ange, asked us about what would be in our manifesto in the UK. We're about to have a general election. And so if a new government came in and they came to you, Mr. Friend, and said, what do we need to do about disability or disabled people? What would be in your, what would be on your list?
I was hoping you were going to kick it off, so I had time to think.
I've already said this is a tricky idea, but no, we can do it. Let's come up with just five things.
All right. Number one, do we have to rank them? Are these in order? Okay, so these are just the five top things.
Yeah.
Five top things. Okay. The one that's always been prevalent, because I had personal experience of it, is inclusive education.
Okay.
I'm not sure that we've got as far as we should have got in terms of allowing disabled children to be educated alongside their peers. And I think special ed, there's that dreadful expression, I'd repeal that. That would not be called special ed. Mm. It would be called children with additional needs.
Yeah.
But I would be looking at how we resource schools, local schools, better in order that they can make sure that very, very severely disabled children are properly and adequately supported at an ordinary school.
And so you would have, doesn't matter on the type of impairment, everybody is taught in the same classroom?
As far as it's humanly possible to do that, yes.
You sound like Corbyn. So when you say as far as human, so there may be some that are in a different classroom.
Yeah, but that we would have raised the bar so high that there would be far fewer of them.
Okay, so just a few that are excluded.
No, not excluded. I didn't say excluded, did I? Honestly, you're so right-wing.
I'm so Andrew Neil. I'm not letting you get off with... You've got. If you're saying the most and humanly possible, that basically is saying there be some that will be not in there.
I've got a fully costed manifesto here.
Yeah, which the IFS has said it's not. We're borrow.
No, I think...
But that's fine, but that's the point. That's why you might say I'm right-wing, but the left-wing thing is we can't acknowledge that there's bad stuff that will happen.
No, but there are other things that come out of this, which is that we've got to attack the way this whole assessment process works.
Mm-hmm.
So families with very severely disabled children, not only do they have very limited choices about where their children can go, but they have to go through bureaucratic nightmares to get them there. So the idea that, you know, you've got to go through God knows how many assessments, all of that thing. Now, I'm not saying assessments are bad. I am saying that it seems to me that it's difficult enough as a family to care for and look after and support a very severely disabled child without also having to be a legal expert, a brilliant way, a person that dealing with bureaucracy and all of that stuff. So we would remove a lot of the red tape.
So we've moved into another area, which might be a lot more support for parents who have children who have disabilities or impairments.
Yes.
Which is separate from the education, but obviously it would link up back with it.
Well, it may be, there's an advocate appointed to each family who is an expert at these things. I mean, there's lots of lawyers and there's lots of other people that understand how the processes work, so maybe they could be attached in some way. Maybe the social services department or the education departments could have that kind of resource made available to them.
So there'd be sort of state funding for an advocate to fight against the local authority?
No, there'd be a state advocate to help a family get through the bureaucracy created by the local authority.
Got you. But, oh, I agree with you, your first bit was let's get rid of some of the red tape in the
first definitely.
Place.
Yes, definitely. Oh, you agree with that?
Oh, I'm being objective. I'm just trying to, you know, I think if the country is going to trust you, we've got to be able to get to the end point, not just have flittery, oh, everyone's got to be happy and everyone goes to the same school, yet when we know there'll be problems. I like your principles, and one extra bit maybe, what about the parents who say, I don't want my child to go to the mainstream school? I think they will find that
difficult. There'll be absolutely no choice for them whatsoever.
So now we're getting to the truth, listener.
No, I think we'd have to help them by listening firstly to their concerns.
Yeah.
Why? What is your... Because I can can remember many times when I was a social worker, parents would often say about their disabled children, well, we don't want them to go to mainstream schools because they'll be bullied.
Right.
I went to a special school where bullying was down to a fine art. Mm. This idea that bullying doesn't go on at ordinary school, at special schools is rubbish.
Yeah.
So what we have to do is do something about the bullying. If that's the problem the parent is concerned about. There may be other concerns they've got. I don't know, maybe religious ones, you know, the faith of their child. There may be issues about the travel, you know, the proximity. Whatever.
I've heard it's more, that bit about the bullying I totally agree with, and I've heard parents debate that, whether their child goes to private school or mainstream, and the idea that if you're one or the other, suddenly that all, you know, resolves it is not true. No. It depends on the school and all the other things. It may be, I think the argument what parents would say is, throw my child into the mainstream education without the right support, they're going to flounder. If they go to, inverted commas, special schools for kids with additional needs, they are going to be catered for. They'll be understood. That's why I want them to go there.
Mm. Well, and that leads, I guess, to far better training for teachers, you know, at teacher training colleges and so on.
Smaller classes.
You know, there are a number of things that would transform, and I'm sure this would make it better for non-disabled children, who are also, as we know, the schools are under-resourced and so on and so forth. So it's got massive spin-offs. That's mine. Anyway, what's yours?
I'm smiling because I do remember, and I think this is generational, because there's probably you and then me, and I was thinking, well, the next generation after me, the 25-year-olds, would be so cool about disability because they went to mainstream school with kids who've got disabilities. And they're not. It's still the same. There's still the same hang-ups and all the other bloody things. It's a nightmare.
Do you remember a name check here? Marianne Rankin.
Yeah.
And she set up a charity called Understanding Disability Educational Trust.
Yeah.
And they put packs together, kits together, which were distributed to every school, primary, junior school, to help those children, non-disabled children, understand what it was like for disabled children. And it was a really good idea, and I think it had some benefits. But as you rightly say, you know, we've had co-ed, boys and girls together, for years and years, and yet boys are still sexist. So we've got to do more than just put them together. We've got to have some kind of education program that works to help children understand each other's differences and so on, and value them.
And I should qualify the bit that I'm feeling, which is obviously, as ever on the show, unsubstantiated by any evidence. It's just anecdotal and an instinct. But the next generation, I feel slightly pitiful. It's not that they dislike disabled kids or are scared of them. It's they feel sorry for them. We've almost reverted to the 70s and early 80s again, where there's a sort of a sorrowful, it must be difficult.
So you think every ordinary school would now run a marathon for the child in B3.
And we do know, when I've spoken to school governors and teachers, and I'm going to get in so much trouble when I say this, the limited knowledge I've had from school governors and teachers is that some parents are quite happy for their child to be statemented, which means they have some sort of condition and it's been acknowledged, because then they get extra support.
Mm.
And the governors and teachers are going, this is getting a little bit too much now, because we're going to have 60% of the kids with some sort of statement of needs.
Well, and you're on record of being very worried about the increasing numbers of disabled people. I think we're up to 28 million now, aren't we, with... according to your stats.
Let's just qualify that. It's not that there's too many of them. It's the how we're measuring the numbers. That's
exactly the
quality of it. So I suppose my first would be access to work. And I want it to be better funded. I want it to be more consistent. And I want it to be easier for people to use. So just in case there is anyone who's never heard of it, it's the funding scheme by the British government. I go and work for an organisation and I need some kit, or I need some support, or I need something, and it costs X amount. This is a pool of money that I can draw down, depending on a few criteria, that will help pay for it. And if I'm a freelancer, it is about me. It's attached to me rather than just the organisation.
That leads to my second one. So we've got
so
two
no
now.
No interrogation.
No, I agree with it.
It's just
perfectly understood.
Thought through.
I notice you've costed it out. You know exactly. Yeah. So right. That's number two. Number three.
Unbelievable.
It's the sherry. Number three.
Yeah.
Personal independence payments.
Independent living or PIP?
No, PIP.
Yeah.
Get rid of.
Okay.
that way we've increased the numbers of people eligible for access to work and also mobility. So we've dealt with that.
Yeah.
But we link it to independent living payments.
Yeah.
So we have one budget. In fact, maybe access to work might not even be necessary if we had one independent living type of income. So I've clearly thought this through, as you can see.
If I have an impairment or long-term health condition, I get a sort of a disability pension of some sort.
Yes.
There's something like this in Australia, I think.
There is in a Scandinavian country.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's new in Australia. So, okay.
So you'd be assessed for your needs.
Yeah.
And then based on that, you would receive financial amount.
So on a monthly basis, or needs to my extra costs.
I don't want to go and means tested against my socialist, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever's there. I trust everybody. I know nobody will rip us off.
Of course. not those poor little disabled.
The idea would be that you would take the Marks and Spencers principle, which is that all your customers are basically honest. So
yeah.
Why would we gear all of our regimes up to catch the thieves?
And don't forget, though, but Marks and Spencer's, you can take stuff back without any quibble. Do you think people who are fraudulent would give the money back? Is that the same principle? No, I'm agreeing. Okay, but you're saying means testing. And sometimes we know means testing is more expensive than just letting it go.
We need a system which accurately works out what a person's needs are and
so
how much they're going to cost.
Yeah.
And then, so people living with support workers,
yeah.
We know many who do.
Yeah.
They are adequately funded to make sure that...
they have a life.
Yeah, and they manage that.
Yeah.
And if they need help managing that, yeah. We're back to looking at advocates or people who can support, particularly those, say, with very severe learning disabilities.
Bearing in mind that we do both do management training, but I've been doing a lot of it this week, and I sometimes joke to the delegates, I am no longer a manager deliberately because management is difficult. Mm. If you're a disabled person, you've now got to employ people, which people do, and manage them. That means tax and income tax and reviews and performance, all
yeah.
sorts.
Yeah.
It's a bloody hard job.
You've got
there.
To have, you know, a health and safety at work position for your support workers. What staggers me is when you think about that, the skills that some severely disabled
yeah.
people have acquired in order to manage all of that,
yeah.
and yet they can't get a job.
I'm a big fan of the independent living and the right funding. A right-wing question might be, is it measured simply on the extra needs and costs they might have? Is there an element of compensation in there? As in, could you have something that's a bit extra? Is there a limit that ensures that there is still an incentive to go out and work, or would you lose some of this if you start earning money? Where's the balance on that?
Well, if you were obviously,
I'm asking you, where's the balance? Oh, sorry, I was getting a bit.
I should be doing is talking over you yeah, throughout exactly. the whole interview. we should practice this more. I think the ultimate goal should be that people, if they want to work, should work. And we should do everything we can to help them do that. Now, if they are working, what I would tend to favour, because I've thought this through, as you can tell, a graduated scheme.
Lovely.
where they're as their earnings go up, so their income support, or whatever we want to call it, goes down.
Yep.
But not totally removed and things like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's, you're encouraging people to work, but you're not insisting that everybody does.
No, and I agree with that, but I feel for me that's not really the point. So there's actually no incentive. When you're saying, because you're saying if they should, if they want to, but what if they ought to? That's...
Oh, hang on. Where did the ought to come from?
Well, I'm trying to... There could be someone who's got a very mild impairment. There's nothing to stop them working.
No.
There's nothing to stop them... And I mean both ways. One, that they could get some personal benefit from it, but also that it's good for society as well, potentially. And I know I'm getting into slightly heavy political territory here. But being... The option to say it's up to them is a huge luxury, isn't it?
Well, if there's an expectation that everybody works... And there is, and that would continue, then the socialisation and all of that would be that we aspire to go to work, we aspire to become successful in whatever that means for us at work, right? But for many disabled people, the barriers they currently face are so horrendous, they can't, however hard they try, get into work. So what we need to do is to make sure that two things here. I've got subsidiary. This is in my other manifesto.
Look at a subcommittee.
Yep. One of them is that no employer can let a disabled person go who's been newly disabled without first proving that they've implemented all the adjustments that are possible for that individual to keep them at work.
Yeah.
Because we know that most disabled people are created So we stop employers from getting rid of people, ill health retirements, things like that, by making sure that... Now, if the person does lose their job, because everything has been tried, and that's highly likely for some people, then we make sure that they get the benefits they need to lead as independent a life as they can. They live in their own homes, they employ their own support workers.
Obviously, because they've all been to a mainstream school, their aspiration of working will be so much greater now. When they all went to special schools, I remember you saying leaving school, you almost like, you'll get your pension soon and well done for being 16. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you've gone to a mainstream school, everyone's talking about what are they going to do for their job. As disabled Joe or Joanna, you're going to go, okay, and you're going to be out
and
there.
And also work. I mean, as we know, work, I remember reading some, it was some time ago now, to be fair, a statistic which said that most of us meet the people we spend the rest of our lives with in partnerships at work.
Absolutely.
So work is a social thing. It's not just about earning money.
I've been trying to shake you off for years.
So that's number three.
So as the listener probably knows that you didn't truly answer the question, but I'm okay with that because it's...
What do you mean?
Bit of should and could. You sort of said there might be want to, but there's barriers. There was still a bit of me saying, do we really encourage?
Before I start making judgments about disabled people, I want to be sure that the barriers that exist within society have been deconstructed. Is that a good enough answer, Mr. Neil?
Yeah. And if you'd had a shop steward badge on you, I would have acknowledged that. Even your tone of voice was beautiful. Here's my next one.
It's number four.
Bearing in mind the arts and culture are so influential in terms of how society views things and understands us, I would be putting a lot more money into disability arts and culture. And I'm happy to broaden that because I think at the moment it's a little bit, elite's the wrong word, but there's a sort of club and there's a lot of people that get the same sort of money. And I want to broaden that out. So one, there's more money in the pot. And different types of conditions or impairments or whatever can access that. But I do want it, and you know, whether that's research and development, whether that's interesting experiments, or but there's something that people can come and see or experience or be part of as well. I wouldn't be measuring just on, we had 17,000 people come and view and 2,000 had a disability. I'd want to kind of, I want a bit more, which is because we've done this around disability, this is how we perceive something, or there's been a cultural shift that we've started to understand. I'm being a bit airy-fairy, I appreciate that.
Well, it's a sort of territory of lovies, isn't it, this area?
But I think it can have a huge impact. There's some debate on Facebook. The BBC have announced a whole raft of programming, which has got disability in it. And I saw some debates on Facebook going, this is the same as it's ever been. It's just wrapped up and there's nothing new. And others going, well, hang on, this is a bit of a push and there's some other things. Yeah, okay.
How radical are you prepared to be?
In what sense radical?
Well, supposing you were to insist that all roles on TV, radio, whatever, that portray a disabled person must be played by a disabled person. Would you go that far? Would you push the envelope that far, Mr. Minty?
I would in the sense of if they have polio at the beginning of the show and they have it at the end, unless they've been to Lourdes and got rid of it, then they should have that as well.
You mean? So they'd be impairment specific. So it wouldn't be good enough being a paraplegic. You'd have to have had polio. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I like it. No, it isn't. Is it? I don't know. What I'm saying is, if someone plays a role that someone becomes disabled, then I think you're allowed not to be disabled and then pretend to be at a certain point because that is part of the role.
Yes.
So there's a slight issue that because the disabled person may not be able to play the non-disabled.
Well, then you'd have a double, wouldn't you? You'd double up there, like a stuntman.
I know of a friend who is a short person who's about to play the role of a short person who uses a wheelchair and this person doesn't use a wheelchair. And she's saying, am I imposter? Am I faking this?
Fake so. Yeah.
So, but the person is generally pretty similar. but just doesn't use the word
so,
yet.
So what you're talking about is a general rule, is making the arts and theatre, creative arts, theatre, radio, TV, all of that stuff, much, much more accessible to disabled people as participants?
No, because you've actually turned it into something else.
Oh.
I'm talking about the artists themselves who have disabilities and greater funding for that. I want us to create the art. I want us to put... I'm not... Don't get me wrong. I love the idea that we're mainstreamed. I love the idea that every theatre production has a disabled person in it, whether the character is or not. All of that, absolutely. But no, you're doing it from that mainstream. I'm
so if you're a blind poet, you get more than a sighted poet. Do you? Do you get additional funding if you're blind?
No, again, you sort of not quite understand it. Well, I'm putting greater money into funding for disability arts. So it isn't that you now get three times more than someone who doesn't have a disability. It's there might be three times more disabled artists.
Right.
So I want more of this art to be created. I want this to be an option, particularly because you're not making any of them go to work. You're letting them flop about. I'm saying, well, let's get some poetry out of you. Or let's have a script, or let's have a song, or whatever it might be. Just greater funding for disability arts.
So you want wheelchair users creating the and the sort of statues and being masons and...
As we say, I'm going to come on to a second one, I would also like to see people with long-term health conditions start doing some of this as well. What we're now, you know, we just talked about this before, we used to call chronically sick. Mm. We got rid of that, but they're back in, and I kind of... Not so it isn't just wheelchair users. I'm a broader definition of disability. And I also want to bung a load. This is my fifth and final point. I want better resourcing around mental health or mental ill health. It was... What
so
is
this it? NHS we've moved into?
I guess it is. Mm.
So is that a fifth manifesto promise?
Well, this is my third, and you've only had two, so I'm allowed you've got another one.
Oh,
we've gone for six, haven't we? Because it's
five, I thought it was.
I know, but that means one of us will be short of one.
See, we can't even agree on how many points we've got in our manifesto.
We're not good at sums.
Special schools, you see.
I feel we talk a good talk. And now there's two bits I'm back to. I was speaking to a psychologist recently, and she's been around a while, and she said, I've got a slight worry that people come along and think, you come to see a psychiatrist or therapist, you're going to be helped and cured, and you're a victim and you need help. And so people don't realise that you've got to do some of this stuff yourself as well. So there's back to my slightly cruel to be kind, I'd get myself in trouble because of that right-wingy bit. But the general principle is they're better funded, that there's quicker. I think people are waiting. If you've got anxiety and depression, it was just this week, you wait 3 months before you're going to get some support. This is horrendous. And I like talking therapies. I'm a big fan of it. So access to that. If you're privately funded, you can do this straight away. If you're not... So, yeah, I want better resourcing and funding of mental health and mental ill health resources.
And I'd support that. And I would also go further and make sure that the health service itself... I know, actually, in real life, the both political parties, the Tories and the Labour parties, have been talking about massive increases in funding for the NHS. Mm. But... I mean, who's going to argue with that?
That is the truth. I want better schooling and more police on the streets.
That's right. More police on the street. Okay. So that's the health service rolled into a bit of the arts as well there, I felt.
No, what I meant was, because I was talking about more money, and bearing in mind we basically just spent a lot. I was saying there's disability arts, but I also want better stuff around mental ill health.
Yes.
Do you want the last one?
I'm just wondering. I've covered... independent living.
Yeah.
We've covered protection at work.
Education.
We've covered education. We've covered the arts.
And access to it, yeah.
Access to it. And the NHS.
And mental health.
Yes, there's only one left then, isn't there?
What's that?
Which has to be social care.
Okay.
Yeah. And social care, I want to be very sort of involve housing in that.
Yeah.
So my feeling is that we know that many older people are ending up in long stay hospitals when they shouldn't be, and because the local authorities can't afford to get the resources they need to live in their own homes. So what we have to do is have a massive financial injection into local authorities, specifically around social care, ring fenced.
Oh, yeah.
And in order for them to do that, they should be allowed to use some of their sale of housing receipts.
Oh, okay. They still selling them?
Well,
they haven't got any left.
Well, no, and they've got them, but all the money they've got, they're not being able to spend, although I think that's changing now.
Okay.
So it's thinking about how would you, so here's a crazy thing, right? My mother, when she was alive, bless her, was moved from a very unsuitable house into a purpose-built, adapted wheelchair home for her to live in, which was fantastic. And the last 5 or 6 years of her life, she lived independently. She had support workers coming in. She called them carers, but they were there and they did all sorts of nice things for her. And she had a lovely 5 years. When she died, the local authority went back into that flat and put it back as it was before. They took out all of the accessible features, including the lowered windows, and put it back to how it was before. Does that work?
Do you remember Athens was supposed to have done this in 2004 after the Paralympics?
They made it
accessible, and then they put it all. Took it all away again.
So housing has to be able to accommodate all of our lifestyle from the cradle to the grave. It used to be called Lifetime Homes, Roundtree Trust, Joseph Roundtree, and Dave Bonnet, another friend of ours, very involved in thinking about how you design housing or accommodation so that it sees you from birth to death. You don't have to move because you can't walk anymore, for example. So that's one. Accessible housing, major priority. But the second one is making
social care. We've gone to housing.
Well, that's why I'm coming back to. Because housing is part of social care.
Okay.
If you can't go back into a house because it's dangerous for you, we have to do something to the house. So it's thinking about the housing alongside the support that older people, frail people, and to some degree younger people, what kind of social care they need too. We talk about independent living, but there will be some nursing care maybe, some other support needs, helping with toileting and those kinds of things, which are...
Are you funding it through inheritance tax? How are you funding this?
Oh, I'm funding it from everything. From all the people. I'm funding it from artworks that you sell. No, it's a serious point. And I think, for me, some of that would come from general taxation. I'd put taxes up. I know. You heard it here first.
There's a lovely piece on the briefing room, David Aranovich on Radio 4, and they talk about how do we fund this in general taxation. I think we're generally between 35 and 40% is what you can get to before there's pushback.
Right.
So we could maybe go up a couple of percent.
We're down at 20% at the moment, aren't we?
No, but you've got to add in national insurance, you're adding in VAT, you're adding in council tax.
Yeah.
That of your gross income, we're hitting 35 to 40%.
So we've still got quite a way to go then.
No, you misunderstood that first bit, which I said that is whenever they go above that, everybody shifts and starts avoiding it. So there's a point, there's a natural bite point. So we may be able to go up a percentage too, absolutely. But there will be repercussions.
Well, I would balance that. So I'd push until people got resistant, and then I'd borrow loads.
Because it's cheap right now.
That's right.
And I heard the other day. Okay, but
if there's a planet left for the next generation, we haven't talked about climate change. Is that not in our manifesto?
It's a disability manifesto.
What about? I heard somewhere the other day that we are way behind many other European countries in terms of borrowing. The amount they spend on their provision for people with disabilities and others is borrowed.
Depending on your political persuasion, but it's not a competition. It's quite good that we're not.
I want to be in the right league table.
You have to repay it.
I want Britain to be at the top of the borrowing
league. Last one, because this is our eighth now. this power has gone to our head. There is a new shop that's opened where I live. And it's called something about everything's green or everything's healthy. And it's one of those shops you take.
Catchy title.
You take your own tubs and you fill it with the honey. You fill it with your beans. It is full on eco.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. I went past it the other day and there's a whopping great, crappy old untouched step. And it's back to my classic that, okay, we need to tighten up what exists. The fact that they can be so right on, but they've just excluded a bunch of people, and it probably wasn't even on the radar. Because I can look at it, I can even see how to solve that pretty quickly and pretty easily.
Yeah.
They may say, okay, we've got a ramp, we can put it down. But that does mean I'm going to have to stand and wave outside for 10 minutes while they go and find it, put it down. I just thought, there's stuff that's kicking around. How can you open up a brand new shop and be so cool and hip and whatever, and yet you've excluded
so you'd changes. Change the planning laws, would you?
I'd close them down.
Shut them immediately.
And I would have that food for those disabled people at school. They would get lots of green stuff. No, I would, that already exists, so I really want to tighten that up.
So you'd have local authorities with inspectors who could go round to these shops and say, you've got 2 months to make this accessible.
Well, yeah, but that's after the fact. I would say to surveyors and architects and whoever's given the planning, this must be accessible, full stop. Unless you can give me the most brilliant reason, then there's no conversation to be had.
Okay.
Furious.
Well, I can understand why.
It really annoys me.
Yeah, what, you can't buy your green beans?
Yes, one, because I'm now excluded from that place, but it annoys me because they think they're really...
Full on, right on people.
That's the problem I've got. Mm. It's where people think they're holier than they are, and, I love the concept, yet they forget a bunch of society.
Outrageous. I went to a meeting recently where they talked about the rights of people, and they talked about BAMEs, and they talked about gay, and the LGBTQs, and they talked about... They never even mentioned me and you. Disability did not come up.
Right, so that's our
10th... I think they're running the shop.
Our 10th agenda item is disability is the number one of all protected characteristics.
Absolutely, without question.
Because it's... Actually, but we've always said it's not at the expense of others, it's to include all of us.
We're changing that in the, it's in the manifesto.
No, I'm not changing that. That was quite a healthy discussion.
I feel better. No, I do feel much
it's
better.
It's so easy, isn't it, if you have no
honestly,
limits.
Why aren't we doing it? Why aren't we in power?
Because we don't, that we have no restrictions.
Should we talk about how little power we got?
Let's move on. Last show, you were going to report back on the fact that your electric wheelchair, 83 or 86 centimetres, was too tall.
That's right.
Chewy, the air people wouldn't take you.
And that's my reference to how little power we've got. Mm-hmm. Because despite various attempts, I can find nothing from Chewy about this. I've written to them. I've been social mediaing. I think you actually forwarded to me a Facebook group that said we'd be interested in this.
Someone else did, but yeah, Peter, who listens to our show, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I've had a go. I have not given up. And everybody that I've talked to now, there is a little opening because, you know, I occasionally do a radio programme on Three Counties Radio, BBC Three Counties Radio.
You're a broadcaster.
I am a broadcaster. And I mentioned in passing off air about this,
yeah,
and they got really interested.
I bet they did.
So, because Luton Airport, of course, is in
flight
their
rights,
area.
Flight rights.
So, anyway, I'll keep the listener updated. At the moment, I don't have anything particular to report, to be fair.
Oh.
But I haven't given up.
But has the Enable Holidays and all of that? I mean, have you written to anybody?
Yeah, I've written to Chewy, and I've written to
and
various
replied.
People. Well, I haven't had any response, no. Right.
Okay.
They and I can't find a ruling. I've been looking to see what particular regulation, if any, they're using.
A variation.
Nothing at all.
Well, I do stay on it, and we're so concerned. We want to know what happens.
Yes.
I recently flew into Berlin. It's the airport. It's called Tegel, T-E-G-E-L, Tegel. Mm. I sat on the plane waiting for my scooter to come, and they were cool. They were talking to me, and it was all very pleasant, but I was feeling a bit, okay. Anyway, the scooter turned up. I got off the plane onto the scooter. We're in your kitchen, which is quite a big kitchen, but from me getting onto the scooter at the side of the plane to getting into the baggage hall where I collect my bags, which I'd already been through security and passport control, was 20 metres, 20 yards.
You could see the plane from where you were.
Each element where the sort of each gate has its own section.
Right.
It was ridiculous. I got on the scooter, I scooted for 4 seconds, and that was it. I was done. And technically, I can walk 19 meters. Can't do any more. but it just made me laugh that this was it's a very old fashioned airport, and they've each got their own little bit. So you go through, you get your passport checked within 10 meters of leaving the plane, you get your bags 10 meters after that, and that's it, you're done.
So this is a new model?
No.
No, I mean, it should be a new model.
It
they should
be.
re reintroduce that system.
When I flew back, I was really early, so I went around the whole airport, and it's just like a big star, a big circular star shape with all these little points coming out. So they each have their own bit.
And was it biplanes or were these jets?
So Tesco...
That sounds interesting.
It was weird. Tesco have introduced lanyards. They're called sun, and they've got sunflowers on them.
Mm.
And they are for people who have non-visible impairments, conditions, that if a Tesco member staff is wearing them, you can go up to them, and they've been specially trained to help you.
Excellent. Who did the training?
Didn't say. Said they will have all been trained.
And the purpose of this is to...
Here's my sad bit. Have a little read, if you can. I think it was on the BBC. And again, I'm going to feel a bit mean here. But I read the piece, and the way it was pitched was because people with non-visible disabilities are pitiful, hopeless, and cannot survive without any support.
And that was said.
You read it, and you get the impression right. that without the sunflower lanyards, these people are never going to be able to shop, and it's going to be hopeless. There was no, generally, we have some independence, or a good design store, or having something on wheels that we can push. It was so overloaded. I read it, and I felt quite depressed. And I felt sorry for people with non-visible conditions, the way this was written.
Do you remember similar issue? Do you remember the approach taken by B&Q when you and I did all that work for B&Q those years ago now?
Early 2000s.
With Kay Allen. Yeah. Kay Allen Palmer now. Their principle, if I'm not mistaken, was that all of our staff would be trained
yep.
to look after anybody.
Assist.
Okay, assist. Fair point, but assist, right? Yep. Now, where they made specific allowances was when they had some bibs that staff were wearing had induction loops sewn into them
yeah.
so that they could have conversations with people that needed induction loops. And they had some tactile stuff. But otherwise, yeah. it was about everybody who works for us will be able to handle and manage and assist a disabled person regardless. Isn't that surely what we should be doing? This again singles disabled people out in some way as special.
Well, could you... Well, okay, I was going to say the lanyard is to identify for the non-visible disabled person... Sorry, the non-visible impaired person...
That person's been trained.
Your argument is they all should be.
Yes.
If you're going to do it,
yes.
do it.
Yeah.
Does that mean that non-visible conditions are more complex?
No, they're just not visible, are they? So the person with it has got to, in some way, reveal themselves. So, for example, someone with a very severe mental health issue who may have a moment where they feel panic, they're in a big shopping area, they're frightened, they would need to be able to find somebody to help them, you know, calm down or whatever. I'm not using my words very well here, but you get my idea. Help them panic less. Well, wondering about with what happens if the person with the lanyard isn't there at that point? Everybody in the store should be helped to manage that. So we have mental health first aiders and whatever else. Now, there may be some people who are specific. So there might be some people, like there was in B&Q, that had sign language training. And there were one or two of them. Not every member of staff had to learn. Although I think at that time B&Q did encourage all staff to go and, you know, get some sign language thing.
Well, my point was the article. The article pitiful, the way it was written for people with the conditions. And I just kind of thought, this is really going backwards.
Yeah.
This is not about us allowing, having independence, about being capable with the right situations. This was, without these helpers, we're doomed.
Mm.
And it was just like, this feels a bit awkward. Yeah, I take your point. Why isn't everyone... I think there was a link to this, which was 3 or 4 years ago, Transport for London had the badges that said, please offer me a seat. So these were people with non-visible conditions. Yeah. Rather than having to go up to someone saying, can I have your seat? And they go, well, what do you want to see? And you go, well, I've got cancer. And you go, oh, shit. And then this was a shortcut.
Mm.
This has come back out again, and I saw some good hardliner disability people go, this is ridiculous. Why aren't we human beings? Why can't we help someone? I just tell them to get out of the seat, and off they go. Which I get that, and that's how I felt. But actually, the people with non-visible conditions were saying, this has been a lifeline. This has changed the game for us. There are now badges that say, ask me and I'll give you my seat. So it is basically avoiding anyone having to talk to anybody.
Yes.
We just look at each other's badges or our lanyards and off we go. Is it just societal embarrassment and awkwardness and this is a shortcut?
I suppose it's about intent and effect, isn't it? The intention is good. What Tesco are trying to do is to do something that's intended to be helpful.
Absolutely.
The effect is that actually lots of people feel embarrassed or the wrong emotions are being ascribed to what they're trying to manage.
Well, that may not be. The people with non-visible impairments may say this is the best thing ever. I'm still critical of the article that was written about them.
So you're separating the two out?
Well, I don't know. There might be people going to Tesco saying that sunflower lanyard has changed my life.
Mm.
I'd just say, but I bet if you read the article, you wouldn't be thrilled about how they describe you.
Right. So, sorry, I misunderstood. So the article that talks about it is written in a way which is very patronising.
It takes you backwards.
So what the intention of Tesco's has been watered down considerably by the way could it's be. Being discussed.
Yeah.
Okay, I get that now. I didn't get it to start with.
Three times I said it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's Christmas.
International Day of Disabled People was this week.
Yes.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. Did you have a good time?
Do
you feel better for it?
Because I was due to have surgery 3 days before, which was then cancelled, in the end I didn't actually have a lot going on.
Oh.
But there were a couple of comedy gigs that Abnormally Funny People were doing, so that's lovely. They were out making people laugh and having fun. It's I put a picture up of Stella Young on Twitter.
Yes, I saw that.
She's one of those good disabled people, or was. I don't know, it was all right, it was good. It's good internationally. We used to be very cynical here, and we dismissed it.
I still am.
Okay. If you're in a country that doesn't have equality legislation, this is a big deal.
Mm.
This means your country's signed up to something that then has to be ratified, and you can hold them to account for what that's worth.
But does anything change in those countries as a result of it?
I presume things do change, and I think they change over time. Well, I think it's better, yeah. I mean, I haven't done a measurement, but that's the point. That is the only measurement and standard that they've got.
I think that's a fair point, the fact that in some parts of the world this actually helps because it focuses attention for a day at least on a particular issue. Parking that for the moment, Marks and Spencers used to open one day a year so disabled people could shop. And we used to lambast that because we want to shop 364. So I don't want this country to celebrate once a year. I want it to celebrate or at least acknowledge the difficulties or the talents of disabled people 365 days a year. That's why I object to it.
You reminded me.
We're all off the hook. We've done it now. Now let's get on with the rest of our lives.
Last year, they did have that sort of purple shopping day, didn't they?
Mm.
And we were a bit. We've gone back 20 years on that. Now, the argument, again, was this will make it a lot easier, this could be really helpful, but, yeah, I enjoy it because it. I know it has impact in some countries. I enjoy the sort of, what's the word, kitsch. I think there's something silly about it, and that sounds a bit disingenuous. But I take your broader point that is it patronising, is it?
I think, for us at least, let's just confine it to the UK. There's an element of tick box.
Yeah.
We ran some training in our company this day. We did this on this day. We offered this on this day. And then the following day, we're back to where we were.
Exactly.
That's my worry. I'm not saying that's true for everyone, but I do think there's an element of that.
I agree with that. No problem with that. I have a technical question, if that's the right word, about being on wheels in the street.
Yes.
So I go down the high street frequently, and I've got my little headphones in, I'm on my scooter, living the dream. And I've noticed that if someone, they could be 20, 30 yards, meters away from me, and they see me. And it happens fairly frequently that they then suddenly walk right into my line of where I'm travelling, the direction of travel.
Is it like you're a magnet?
I don't. I think that there's something weird about it, which then forces me to have to move over the other way. And I think, just stay where you are and we're fine. What I've also noticed is if I'm going down and say at the side of the pavement there are bins or there's trees or obstacles.
So you're not on the curb side, you're on the other side.
On the pavement, yeah. On the proper pavement, yeah. But there are trees and curbs, so there's obstacles.
Yeah.
So there's a patch that is clear and then there's a patch usually near the road. Now, more often than not, I will go to the side by the road, so I'll just swerve in and out of the trees and the bins because I'm staying away from the larger part of the pavement.
Mm.
Someone will see me, and then they move over to where the trees and the bins, the obstacle side of it is. So I then have to move over to the middle, the other side of the pavement. What I've started to do, because I'm getting old and grumpy, is just not moving until I almost ram people. And I'm just holding my line, and then they have to do this massive move out of the way. And I presume some of them are swearing me. That's why I put my headphones in, so I don't have to hear them go, you bloody idiot. But it's them. What is going on?
I have no idea what's going on.
Does this not happen to you as a wheelchair user?
Not really.
Don't people overcompensate? They suddenly make a big song and dance and make it worse.
But I'm unlike you. I'm oblivious to it. You see, I think you're still at your let's play chicken stage when you were about 14. So who's going to crack first? So you maintain the same line towards each other. I think when they jump behind the trees, it's they're trying to get out of your way.
I've had people who cross the bloody road. I mean,
to avoid you.
It's back to that bit of...
Take this too personally. You're taking this very personally.
It's as if I've only just started using the scooter that day. And if it wasn't for their benevolence... They're wearing bloody sunflower lanyards, all of these jokers, I tell you. they need to be trained on... Hang on, when you say you're oblivious, are you out on your own or are you with... If I'm with someone,
no,
I don't
I've usually
notice.
Got 14 support workers with me. What do you think I'm doing? Of course I'm out on my own. I'm independent.
Okay, but I meant was if you were
but
with somebody...
But I am in a powered chair, not a scooter, and it is a big old thing. Whereas I think you're much lower down than me, which means you could get on Chewy Airlines, which really hacks me off. I'm lower down. I'm higher than you.
Yeah.
You're lower down. So I'm not sure. I, being serious, I have certainly had people go right over the top of me when they're walking towards me, usually looking at their phone.
Of course.
And they go straight over the top of me, as if it's my fault.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I get that. But I can't really say that I've experienced quite the dodgems and chicken that you play whenever you go out in the street.
I suspect, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I come home of a weekend and don't need to use my car again, everything is, my high street is really close, my tailor's where I take and dry clean, that's for this long journey. And I scoot everywhere.
Yeah.
Do you scoot down the high street
twice
a week?
No. No, I don't. I live in the country.
You do.
I have to avoid foxes.
Again, if the listener ever has this, I'd be interested. I think what people are doing are trying to overcompensate and predict what my needs are.
Mm.
Misunderstanding that I know exactly what I'm doing. And I've been doing this for quite a while. So you just carry on and I'll just carry on and we'll be fine. Mm. But because they move, everyone then has to move.
I wouldn't worry about that. Just carry on.
That's what I've started to do.
Yeah.
But they're not thrilled when we hit each other.
No, that's their problem.
Yeah, but then you're telling me I should be playing chicken.
No, what I'm saying is I think in your head that's what's going on. You are now, I can see, you come out of your house and you get onto the pavement, you go, right, it's a war zone.
No.
Let's see who I can drive onto the pavement or off it or into the bins or...
No, I'm not all primed and ready. school kids, I am. They're the ones who get me anxious. But no, I only notice it... Yeah, it's a funny old thing.
I can't say I've ever...
You need to get out.
I need to be in busy high streets. I can't say I've noticed that.
There was once one person and they kept going further and further closer to the wall. So I just carried on until the end. They weren't climbing the wall, but I had trapped them against the wall. They were trapped right against my skin. I went, oh, I'm so sorry.
I think you're abusing your power as a minority.
No! I am educating people who are patronising me.
You need a lanyard on, which says, in very large letters, I am not going to swerve.
I am visible. And you know, there is one bit I'm a bit annoyed with myself. I feel as a society we're getting ratty and angry and impatient, and here I am doing the same. I will, more often than not, particularly when I'm abroad, and it doesn't happen when I'm abroad, weirdly, what I get is a lot of smiles and little nods and little, and I go past kids and I have a little chat. And so most of the time it's pretty happy and I should stop being so ratty. But it,
well, there was a survey, wasn't there, of school children recently that said they're unhappier than their European counterparts. So maybe there's something in that. We're all just miserable.
Until they meet me on the street and I cheer them up.
No, they jump for their lives, mainly. I mean, we're getting there now. Listener's Corner. We've had quite a lot of correspondence this time, haven't we?
Yes.
Yes.
Go on then.
Well, let's start with the challenge that we had around a playlist of songs for disabled people. What have you got? I had our friend Liam.
Liam O'Carroll.
Liam O'Carroll, who's blind. And I can't remember what his was now.
Well, he didn't have any. He said, I'll keep thinking.
Oh, that's right.
And I deliberately didn't answer because I thought there's some too many cliches. But you had one, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what that was now because I sent it to
Blinded by the Light.
Blinded by the Light was the one, yeah.
But I feel I was thinking that I Can See Clearly Now, or that there's too many. You don't want to make it a pun. You want it to have some depth, don't you?
Right. Well, I don't know, really. I think with Liam, we just went for what we went for.
I think Liam was thinking good and hard. The bit that I liked most about his email, he said, I much prefer your show is when it's just the two of you and not some interminable guest.
You're interviewing. With apologies to all our guests.
That's unbelievable. But thanks, Liam. I do appreciate that.
Well, it is different if it's just the two of us, that's for sure. What else did we get from our listeners about a Randy Newman song?
No, hold up. Who is the bloke Paul who wrote to you?
Paul Nihil.
Okay, what was he talking about?
Well, he was mainly commenting about the PDP programmes.
Ah,
and he was saying how
programs.
He'd been on one. He came on one of my courses a long time ago now, actually, dear old Paul. And he said in his note to us that it was the best course he ever went on or ever expected to go on. That was high praise.
Including the future,
he's anticipating. But what he also said, which I thought was really very helpful and interesting, was that he goes back as a guest speaker on the PDP courses that are still running. And it's almost like being transported back onto his own course. It recharges all his batteries when he's with lots of disabled people and they're all sharing their stories and stuff. So that was lovely.
If you are a first-time listener, the last show we had a long chat about Phil and I delivering these personal development programmes. I really enjoyed that conversation. And Andrew Wakelin, who both you and I have worked with and for many years, he's the guy who I now do the PDPs for. He wrote a very interesting email saying, why do you think there is only half a dozen clients that do this for disabled people, yet he knows of many organisations that do development courses for women or BAME groups, other areas. The disability one doesn't happen so much.
Mm. And it kind of goes back to perhaps a little jokey a moment or two ago when we were talking about how I go to conferences and disability is not even mentioned. And I get that kind of same feel here, that we're investing in certain groups of our staff and certain protected characteristic groups, but we're not investing in disability. And I don't know why that is. I really don't know why that is.
I wondered whether it was financial and whether it's, you know, 3 days away and all the cost of adjustments. And he said, no, all the other courses are expensive as well. It wasn't a cost thing. His guess, or sort of best guess, was the courses we do are different. The ones for BAME or women were about people who have been seen as high flyers.
Yeah.
And they're climbing the ladder, and this was an accelerated program to speed it up for them.
Mm.
For the disability one, it can be that people who have ground to a halt for some sort of reason and their career has got stuck, and we're unpicking what that is and putting it all back together, whether it's related to impairment or not. And so he's saying that's a totally different concept. That's not about ploughing money into your management. It's about ploughing money into people who may not become managers. Mm. Maybe that is back to your point that it's not valued, but the reason someone might come is very different.
I think that's true, although, and I haven't responded to Andrew, I should have done. When Andrew and I worked together at Lloyd's, one of the courses that was set up was a CDP course, career development course. Absolutely. That was specifically for high flyers or people that have been recognised as potential leaders and so on. But
who
those,
had disabilities.
Who had disabilities. And those courses, they ran for a while, but they've never been picked up by any other organisations. So I take Andrew's point. I mean, I don't know. I just don't know.
But I'm curious,
why.
At what point did it change from career to personal?
Well, because what you've just said is that we
recognise... ran out of high flyers.
Well, we recognise that in order to become a high flyer, I might have to go through the personal stuff first. There was lots of stuff around my impairment is the issue here, my disability, and I've got to get that squared away before I can begin. So we now talk, as you do, about helping disabled people be more effective.
Yeah.
So if I help them be more effective, they may well then get promoted. So we're not coming at it from a... Whereas with black and ethnic groups, there is a definite focus on becoming leaders, you know, running the organisation. That's not what happens on the PDP courses.
You're right. And I want to drop career and personal. I just want it to be called a development course because I think some of it is about their career. And it is, we're talking about interviews and practising and finding the right next job for you. And but disability's got a bit more. Jumping back to songs... Damon Rose, who I produce Ouch with, our show had been out 3 days and he started writing to me saying, I want to find out more songs around disability. And I'm like, what? How did that suddenly happen?
See, we're market leaders.
And then
leaders.
The BBC had done an article about a woman called Tilly Moses who has written a song called The Social Model.
Really?
Can you believe someone's written a song called The Social Model?
Have you heard it?
Yes, I have.
And?
Well, I happened to hear it as soon as I read this article. Damon, same time, said, and there's this woman who's written the song called The Social Model. Oh, Damon, come on. But we might be doing a playlist on Ouch. We're trying to get her on the show.
Right.
It's a perfectly good song. It's a slower, I wouldn't say it's a ballad, but it's not like a, it's not Public Enemy number one. It's a more softer song. It's more Eva Cassidy, as you like. but she's a fabulous musician, don't get me wrong.
Right. What about Freedom and Rights by...
No, Choices and Rights.
Oh, Choices and Rights.
By Johnny Crescendo.
Is Tilly in that vein, do you think?
No, she is someone who has a disability and she's said she learnt about the social model and various other bits and she said, I need to explore this with my music.
Right.
So I think there's an album that is around it. No, Choices and Rights, Baroness Jane Campbell put on her Desert Island Discs as one of her songs.
Did she? I didn't hear that program. I'd forgotten that.
Oh, it's fabulous. Fabulous. Yeah. Choices and Rights is definitely up there.
Well, I think the listener should keep piling them in. And if we don't use them, you might use them on BBC Ouch.
We've had three. We haven't had piles. Three.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
That is it for this show. Thank you for bearing with our usual nonsense and lack of structure and research.
Lack of research.
We recording it, and it's just a few weeks to go for Christmas. By the time it comes out, it might only be a week or two. So we would take this opportunity to wish you a very Merry Christmas, if that's your bag. If not, have a brilliant holiday, and I hope you have a bit of relaxation time and enjoy whatever you do.
I second all of that.
Thank you. What if they wanted to write to us?
Well, they could write to us at thephilandsimonshow@gmail.com.
Certainly can. We're on Twitter and Facebook, which quite a lot of people drop us little messages to. And we're on LinkedIn as well. So wherever you want to go to, say hello, give us a song, tell us whether you like trapping people on the pavement like me. What do you think of the sunflower lanyard?
Yes. Whatever turns you on, we'd love to hear from you. So please drop us a note.
Okay, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much. See you soon. Bye.